Hi, and welcome to the Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dotson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest for the request of the Portage City Council to adopt a smoke-free air policy. Jenny Lindsay reports on Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita's proposed Parent Bill of Rights, a document that reflects the ongoing national debate about teaching critical race theory in schools. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Gary native and filmmaker Chris Robinson about his new documentary, Looted. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The leaders of several large healthcare systems are approaching the Portage City Council to adopt the proposed smoke-free air policy. The letter to the city officials asks the council to support the policy by eliminating exemptions for all workplaces, including bars, restaurants, retail tobacco stores, and membership clubs. In the letter to the council, the health system leaders said their goal is to pass the strongest ordinance possible to benefit the health of Portage citizens and employees. In the letter, the leaders say statistics and evidence support the negative impact of secondhand smoke on workers everywhere. Secondhand smoke exposure is a serious health concern. The letter from Northwest Health, Community Healthcare System, Franciscan Health, HealthLink, North Shore Health Centers, and Porter Stark Services says their hospitals and healthcare facilities bear witness to the significant health burden secondhand smoke places on our community, and they insist smoke-free laws are proven to save lives and prevent disease.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The South Shore Convention and Visitors Authority Board has decided not to renew the contract of Sparrows Batistados, which expires at the end of this year. A major figure in the Northwest Indiana tourism scene for decades, three board members said the main issue was compensation, with Batistados earning more than $300,000 in combined salary and benefits. But tensions have also been high over other issues, including performance and attitude. While a letter to Batistados notes he could be considered for a new contract, multiple board members told The Times Thursday, but the board's intent is to not continue with him, citing friction between the CEO and the board. Batistados, however, referred to the letter as a procedural issue so that his contract would not automatically roll over. The Times reports Sparrows began his long and distinguished career in the hospitality industry at the Star Plaza more than 40 years ago. He was named president and CEO of the South Shore Convention and Visitors Authority in 1989, building the Indiana Welcome Center in Hammond and increasing the budget tenfold in his first 12 years.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Franciscan Health Hammond staff members have delivered meals and made donations to St. Joseph's Carmelite Home in East Chicago after a devastating fire last month. The blaze destroyed one of the facility's buildings, which included the kitchen. The hospital's medical executive committee is donating $5,000 from the medical staff fund, which is physician-owned and supplied. The funds will aid the recovery effort from the May 16th fire at the home, which provides residential care for children in crisis. Other donations, including gift cards, checks, and cash, have poured in from Franciscan Health employees from around Northwest Indiana to help the Carmelite Home replace children's clothing and other belongings lost in the fire.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The July 23rd Pierogi Fest parade will take a different route. Organizers say the parade kicks off at 7 p.m. and will run along 119th Street through Hammond's Robertsdale neighborhood from Forsyth Park to Atchison Avenue. The Times reports it will follow part of the traditional route, but will end just west of the main entrance, so it will not pass by the food vendors set up in downtown Whiting, and people will not have to watch it from the rooftops this year. Chairman Tom Dapperton says they decided to change the route this year and says blame COVID-19 if it does not work out. He adds that the move also makes Pierogi Fest a truly Whiting-Robertsdale event that took organizers only 27 years to accomplish. Retired CBS2 meteorologist Steve Baskerville will serve as the Grand Marshal of the parade, which will feature Mr. Pierogi, Ms. Potchke, the Precision Lawnmower Drill Team, and, Mr. Dapperton says, some extraterrestrial surprises.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana Department of Natural Resources conservation officers in District 10, on behalf of the Indiana Turn In a Poacher organization, presented a $500 reward check to 12-year-old Valparaiso resident Bridger Strickland for reporting fish and wildlife violations he saw to law enforcement. The Times reports, because of Strickland's report, an investigation was launched leading to the identity of the suspect and charges being filed. TIP protects fish and wildlife resources through public support and involvement in bringing violators to justice. A press release defined a poacher as a thief who illegally steals wildlife that belongs to each Indiana resident. Anyone can call TIP at 1-800-TIP-IDNR if they see or hear about a packer or another violation. If your call leads to an arrest, you can receive as much as a $500 reward, and you can choose to remain anonymous.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita released a document this week called the Parents' Bill of Rights that, in part, condemns teaching about race in schools. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports.
Rokita's Parent Bill of Rights includes ways for parents to interact with school boards and review curriculum and state standards, but it also frames teaching about issues like diversity and inclusion as a way to sneak lessons on race into classrooms. But Rachel Burke, president of the Indiana Parent Teacher Association, says she sees the document as a political play, not something to truly serve parents.
I think a parent should absolutely know what their rights are regarding the education of their children. I think that those rights need to come without a political agenda behind them.
The Indiana Department of Education says it was not involved in creating the document. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The future of Indiana's revenge porn law is being put to the test. The state Supreme Court Thursday heard arguments about whether the law violates the First Amendment. The revenge porn law makes it a crime to share a so-called intimate image if the person sharing it knows the person in the image did not consent to it being shared. College student Connor Katz shared on Snapchat a brief video of his then-girlfriend performing oral sex without her consent. Katz attorney Stacy Yuliana says doing that was stupid, but she questions whether it should be criminal.
Whether the legislature intended to criminalize the act of showing one person in a private conversation a 2-second fleeting video from which the alleged victim is not even identifiable.
But attorney Karen Shipper, arguing for the state, says the law is very narrowly written and serves a vital purpose in protecting people.
Deterrence is key because the damage to the victim is immediate and cannot be undone.
There is no timeline for when the Supreme Court will issue its decision.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
School choice has saved Indiana millions of dollars, according to a new study. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay explains the savings have come from the use of private school vouchers and student transfers between public school districts.
According to the analysis, Indiana saved nearly $90 million during the 2019-2020 school year. Much of the savings came from private school vouchers because those are funded at a lower per-student rate. But economist and study co-author Michael Hicks says the choice option most students in Indiana use is a transfer between public schools. And it saves money when kids go to schools that receive less funding per student in the state's formula.
The real beneficiaries of school choice have been high-performing local public schools.
But Hicks says the state's recent expansion of the voucher program may eliminate a large chunk of school choice savings. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's Regionally Speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with region native and filmmaker Chris Robinson. Chris Robinson.
This is Regionally Speaking from Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. A native of Gary has spent some time away from home. Now he's come back to his hometown to take a close look of the city of Gary in a documentary that has come out about his hometown of Gary. Chris Robinson is with us. And Chris,
how
thanks
you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio. Tell us first about yourself, about your interest in journalism, and particularly your early interest, I understand, in learning how to be a good storyteller.
Okay, sounds good. So thank you for having me again. I'm Chris Robinson. I'm 23 years old. I was born in Gary, Indiana. I went to Westside High School, where I graduated from in 2016. From there, I went on to Morehouse College, where I studied English and journalism. And that's where I truly noticed that, you know, I had a passion and an interest for storytelling. As a child and growing up, I spent some time at Bishop Nove, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. And I remember there's when I had my first interest writing for the Journal, which is the Bishop Nove Institute kind of newsletter. And then we also did, I was a football player. So in my off season, I would help out the basketball team and do coverage on the games. So that's when I originally first noticed that I had an interest for storytelling and just, you know, being on the journalism side of things as a career other than, well, at the time, you know, I was just kind of focused on sports. So I guess that was like, wow, this is, you know, kind of really what I want to do in life. So when I got to Morehouse, kind of kept with it. I took a lot of journalism classes, of course, just learning a lot of different styles, anything from APA writing to production skills or being on a newsroom. So just, you know, learning all of those things and seeing all the things in Atlanta like TNT and just really learning that the opportunities were limitless for journalists in this world.
I know you do a lot of multimedia journalism now. Did your start in journalism kind of get you interested into that, and you worked your way into the other media that's out there besides just print?
Yeah, at Morehouse, I definitely would get my start with the Maroon Tiger, I would say, in digital media. The Maroon Tiger was our media outlet, basically, when we had print, online, social media, and that's where they would, you know, really my interest there was I became interested in interviews, and just we would have a YouTube channel. So we would, you know, do interviews with other students, kind of like, I don't want to say campus celebrities, but people who were kind of, you know, had a good name on campus
right.
And could get us some good views. So, you know, we would tell their stories. And, you know, I had a lot of great professors. And also I was a member of the National Black Journalism Association. And, you know, that was an outstanding opportunity going to their conferences and working with other black journalists, just learning more about storytelling and telling these stories about our communities that need to be told.
Did you have any mentors or any people that you looked up to while you were still in college and your association with the Black Journalists Association?
Yeah, definitely. Ron Thomas was my college advisor and mentor. He's a great guy. He was a big-time reporter in Oakland for for most of his career in journalism. He's a huge journalist. If you guys want to look him up, I'm not sure if anybody's like big on journalism, but Ron Thomas, he was one of my advisors and mentors. And then in the area of Northwest Indiana, Kadero Thigpen also helped me out a lot within the last year, just kind of adjusting to the undergrad or after the undergrad life as a freelancer, rather. So also one more guy, Trevor Kane, helped me a lot with my film and just kind of setting the blueprint for starting my production company, my enterprise, and just working for that, working kind of for myself. Trevor helped me a lot with that. So he's been great in the past year.
Okay, let's talk about the film. Let's talk about Looted, which is the documentary about your hometown of Gary. If you will, first tell us some general facts, things that you've learned, certainly from school, but from real life, from living in Gary, about how the city changed over the time and what, unfortunately, it led to the incidents of looting in Gary.
Yeah, I would say one of the most interesting facts, there's a bunch of facts, I promise, in the documentary, but one of the most that I would say growing up, I was always interested to know, why did Gary and Maryville kind of happen? From my understanding, when I was a child, you know, we all knew that Gary or Maryville was once Gary. So growing up and actually doing research for my documentary and finding out that the state of Indiana made a buffer zone law, or they made the buffer zone law exempt in Maryville, which means that, so basically in Indiana, the buffer zone law means that you can't build a city outside of a city within 3 to 15 miles if it's already like not a rural city. So they made an exemption for Maryville because it was a rural city. And that then led it to commercial businesses, more residents and all types of things. You know, Maryville has been around for about 40 years now as a town. So, you know, it was just kind of interesting to see how that actually happened and how, you know, Gary actually gave up half of their land almost with South County to start another town in Indiana. So, you know, that was very interesting. And to only figure out that it happened right here in Gary was kind of very interesting. So,
you mentioned some interesting facts that maybe some people know from school or from their own studies about the fact that that the peak population in Gary back in the 1960s was pretty high. It was 178,000. That's a respectably sized city. Cities that size in Indiana today would be considered pretty big. But that changed a lot for the many of reasons that I know that you mentioned in the documentary, Looted. But tell us a little bit more about what you learned in that respect and how that's all fit in together in the film.
Personally, I have a lot of educators in my family. And I know that, so as an English major, a lot of people look to me to kind of go into the education field, but I had other plans, of course. But a lot of people in my family became educators, and I respect the career because, you know, to work with kids or to be a teacher is just a job that, you know, is not for everybody, or it's truly a taxing one. So when I learned that most people came to Gary to actually become teachers or to work in the education field, you know, I was just astonished because I didn't really know that. And then also the steel mill, the job for most people at the time, you know, you were either, if you were college educated, you would become maybe a teacher or a pastor. If you were, you know, a regular working class guy, steel mill was open and everybody can get a job. But now, you know, neither one of those options are here for the youth in Gary right now. You know, even if I was to come home and teach, I wouldn't, you know, really have a teaching opportunity, I don't think, in Gary. Or, you know, most of my friends who became welders or stuff, they have to go to Chicago to find good work now. So it's just like, you know, the opportunities in the city have become very limited to none. And we got to do something about that and, you know, start making these changes and start having these conversations about what we can do.
I know that you've certainly learned over your lifetime so far and seen the changes in business, besides industry, but in just the businesses in Gary, about how downtown Gary used to be a huge, thriving place. People from South Lake County would come to Gary to shop. They'd come up to Sears and to the other stores there on Broadway.
It's almost unbelievable.
Yeah, and you probably made note of that, I'm sure, in the film about the decline of business all tied together because of the decline in steel mills. What would you say that in the documentary Looted that you have out there that can be viewed and probably available for anybody to look into more depth that you think were some of the key points that you wanted to make about the changes not only in business and industry, but also in the racial makeup and interests in Gary?
Well, yeah, I would say just, you know, that these issues have been existing or they have been at, you know, trouble for our community for over 20 to 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now it's time. It's all about identifying those issues, figuring out what we can do, and making action. So whether, you know, those are racial issues that we may face from the state of Indiana, if those are, you know, educational issues that the school system are facing, you know, we need to create more jobs, all of those things. can happen, you know, within the next 10 years. And Gary can become a very nice city.
You came up with the title Looted. Was that a reference to some of the unrest that happened in Gary and other similar cities in Indiana and the nation at the time that there was so much unrest, I guess, about not only about racial issues, but economic issues, too?
Yeah, so you're 100% right. The name Looted did come from the time last year around this time, which is actually when I started. And I was driving down Gary, and what I kind of noticed is that, you know, our community had truly been looted. You know, when you looked at the news and when you looked at, or if you were at a riot or something and you saw, you know, the unrest and you saw the buildings that were torn down or burning or had holes in them, and then you would come to Gary a week later, you would say, oh, this is the same thing. But, you know, for citizens in Gary, this is everyday life. For someone who was a member at the riots or a member that night, you know, this is, they're going to clean this up in the morning. But for Gary, this is every day. This is what our citizens are faced with. So that's why we're looted.
Chris Robinson, if you will spend a little time telling us about how you put this thing together, this documentary. I think most people consider documentaries maybe not necessarily the exclusive domain of people like Ken Burns, but a lot of people like Ken Burns have put together similar documentaries. What did you do as a budding documentarian to get this particular project going?
I had a teacher, another one of my great mentors, Mickey Harris, and she told me, you know, when you're not doing anything, that's when you can do the most. So I was just thinking at the time, I was freshly out of college, freshly out of undergrad, and kind of what I wanted to do, you know, was just kind of my own thing, or what I wanted to do was, you know, something that I couldn't do for anybody else and what I can do for myself. And a lot of people, I guess, had an expectation of me to kind of help the city of Gary. Or not even like an expectation, just some of my friends generally thought that, you know, I would come back and do things in the city right away. Not saying that I won't do things in the city, but Looted is something that I can do for the city right now. When I look at my time and my talents and, you know, what I can actually do as far as the infrastructure that I do have now, Looted is exactly, you know, what can be done and exactly what's happening to, you know, start these conversations. But when we talk about putting together the documentary, I literally, you know, started, it was during the coronavirus pandemic. So I remember the first guy I talked to, we were kind of sitting 6 feet away from each other in the room, but we were talking just a casual conversation about Gary. And, you know, this is just a citizen who was on the fire department at one time. So, you know, not anybody of, you know, too much notoriety or, but at the same time, still a, you know, a respected citizen. And I remember I just began to pull out my notepad and take notes. And then from there, you know, put together a template. And, you know, it's just a snowball effect. Like, okay, I have this information. Where do I go from here? And I didn't know much about making documentaries. Like you said, I'm no Ken Burns, but I knew that, you know, it can be done. So, you know, it's just, like I said, snowball effect in it every time. And I was still back and forth from Atlanta to Gary. So, you know, coming home for a week and a half to work, coming home. And then I actually came home once to bring some friends from Atlanta who worked with my production company. And, you know, we actually got started on the interviews. You know, when we had a full week of interviews, you know, 5 people a day, we did 21 interviews for this documentary. So, you know, it was really a process, and I love to watch the process. I'm still trusting the process, and I'm hoping that, you know, there will be a lot to reap.
What kind of research did you get to do? What places for research information did you get to raid to be able to put everything together that will go into the documentary that people will see?
Yeah, the best research was talking to people. You know, there's plenty of information on Gary on the internet. There's plenty of books about Gary. Also, John Trafany, he has a series of books. He's one of my teachers at Bishop Noel. I finally buckled down and purchased his books and read them. And he has they're actually just photojournalist books, and they tell stories through the photos. So about this, and it's kind of where I got the timeline for my documentary from, because his books start around the early 30s, but I picked up in the 60s. And, you know, he just tells a story from, like, what schools look like around the time, steel mills, people going to work, and they're just photojournalism books, and they're awesome. So that helped me, like, give a timeline and a kind of structure to the documentary. But just anything else, I would say, as far as research, really came from talking to citizens and really the people, you know, who say, hey, man, I can tell you this, but I don't want my story told. You know, people like that have the best stories, or people who, you know, will tell a story and they don't care because they've known the story for 40 years. And, you know, now it's time to actually tell it. So those type of stories are the best stories and make the best for visual storytelling.
Well, it sounds like that those are the stories that will definitely be the ones to wait to listen to see when you get to have a chance to see the documentary about the city of Gary called Looted. And it's been put together by Gary native and a Morehouse graduate, Chris Robinson. By the way, the premiere of the documentary is going to happen on Sunday, the 27th at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And it'll be performed, presented at the Art House, the Social Kitchen on Fifth Avenue in Gary. So I suppose that if nobody wants to go to a baseball game across the street, they ought to come over and watch the documentary, I suppose.
Yeah, there are a few tickets left. What I will say is if you are interested and you can't make it to the premiere, the movie will be available same day on my website, which is www.chrisprobinson.us/looted for the looted page. But feel free to check out the website. You can check out a lot of other things I worked on. Check out this project. Plenty of other multimedia journalists. I have a couple articles up and everything. So,
well, Chris, thank you for spending time talking about your latest work, the documentary about your hometown of Gary called Looted. Chris Robinson is a native of Gary. Thank you for being with us today on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.